Emer Coughlan. Good morning to you, Emer.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Very, very well, and it's a delight to speak to you. And we wanted to chat to you because yours is a story of inspiration, I think, to me in any case, and hopefully to our listeners too. Now, your story is that you were diagnosed with stage 3 cancer last October. How much about that do you want to tell us, Emer?
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you the beginning of the story. It was actually mid-November. It was in mid-November I woke up one morning and there was like a lump the size of a lemon that had grown overnight, which was insane. Mm. And it was so abnormal, I knew straight away, okay, I need to go to the GP that day. And they said, oh, it's probably just a cyst. And within a week, I was at the breast cancer clinic to do a scan. And I saw her worried face when she took the 3 biopsies, and they first mentioned then, like within a week, that it was cancerous. So it was really quick. I mean, the NHS here has been so efficient and amazing. But, you know, my first reaction was, that's interesting, you know, because I just felt that this was just a new path that had been given to me. And when I came out of that, you know, normal, when the first mention of cancer, a normal reaction would be to cry. But my reaction coming out was strangely of elevation, because I felt complete, like a path had been opened up for me, that God just came into my presence and he just gave me this armor inside my soul. So then going through each of the steps afterwards, I was completely positive with everything. And I went to the mammogram, and then the diagnosis was on the 4th of December when they said it was stage 3A, I believe. And
can you describe what that is, stage 3, and, and how that is graded?
Yeah, stage 3 basically is that it's spread, as far as I'm aware, you know, don't take medical advice off me, but as far as I'm aware, it's because it's spread to the lymph nodes already. Okay. That's when it's stage 3, when it's spread to the lymph nodes. And then if it's A or B, I believe it's the size of the tumour. And mine, in my case, was nearly 7 centimetres, and it was 4 centimetres thick. And I found out afterwards there was actually 2 tumours. Now, the doctors didn't even believe me that it grew overnight, because it's, you know, biologically really insane that that appeared overnight. So they said perhaps it was just a really tiny small lump that had grown inside of me for silently for maybe a year and a bit. So if that lump didn't appear like it did, it would have silently spread throughout my body. So the diagnosis basically was, you know, you can be curable if you start chemo ASAP.
And that's what you did.
Yeah, so within 12 days, I started my my chemo, and which again is amazing. And I think they fast-tracked me in a sense, because I was 31, you know, when I got the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I'm 32 now since March. But because I'm young, I have grade 3 cancer. And a grade is different to stage. Grade is the speed of growth.
Okay.
Grade 1 would be slow. Grade 2 would be moderate. Grade 3 would be fast. And because I'm young, my cells are multiplying faster.
Okay,
so I have the fastest speed. If I was older, maybe in my 60s, I would get grade 1 and grade 2. So...
Right, well, let's get back to your reaction, because it's the, for many people listening, and many people have had that news, it's devastating, it's life-changing. Your reaction was very different, as you've outlined, but those around you, your family and your loved ones, you have to pass on that information to them, and you can't expect all of them to be able to be as positive as you are. So did you find yourself, to some extent, comforting those concerned and those that love you?
Definitely. I mean, I think what comforted in the beginning was how I delivered it and my positivity and the strength I had, which came from my faith. I mean, I just was so strong that I think, first of all, that strengthened them. So I, in a way, I didn't need to comfort them as much as anyone else, but they could see straight away that I complete faith and trust in God, and no matter what, where this takes me, everything is going to be okay. And I feel that that helped them, but, you know, the youngest 7, you know, I have older brothers and sisters. My oldest brother is, you know, 40, maybe 48 or something, but so I was 31. So for them, it was a complete shock. But in a way, I think I've been teaching them, in a sense, how to deal with challenges in your life. And, but, you know, I had a cousin, all right, that, you know, started crying on the phone to me, because, of course, it was a real shock. But I was telling her, look, this is going to be, for me, cancer has never been devastating. It's been inspiring.
And you mentioned at one stage that it made you feel like you had something to live for.
Yeah, like I felt before this happened, you know, 31, I have a creative soul, but, you know, I was in an office job feeling that I had, you know, I was just coasting along life, didn't really, I wasn't really achieving what I should be achieving on this world. And I felt I had so much to give to the world, but I didn't know what to give it. Yeah. Cancer has given me a story. It has inspired me.
What is the reaction? I beg your pardon, Emma. What has the reaction been? Because, you know, there could be people listening that think that you're making light of something serious. Now, I wouldn't subscribe to that, because I think everybody, it's up to everybody themselves to how they deal with something. And you're not preaching. I know that for a fact, like, that everyone's not going to react like you. But did you get any backlash in that, you know, it's all right for you, Emer, but what about us sort of a thing from the general public through your blog?
No, actually, it's been quite inspiring, because people have just... I've probably been giving a unique perspective on things. And I think with my blog, Ahead with Style, it's basically the message is to celebrate your head, but be ahead of cancer with style. So it's focusing on the beauty and the fashion of how you can make your chemo head, I call myself a chemo queen, you know, but your bald head, to make it fashionable. So I think I'm inspiring women as well to not have to hide underneath the wig if they don't want to. You know, if you want to wear a wig, that's fine. But my message is that let's be bald and beautiful. And that has resonated with a lot of women, because me, myself, I've been in that situation where, okay, I'm going down the chemo route. I'm going to lose my hair. I looked on the internet and there was no inspiration of people rocking their look. So I decided to be the inspiration I wish I had. So I know there's people out there who are like me in a sense. Like, everyone has their unique journey and they resonate with different stories, and certain people have resonated with my story just the way I would resonate with
and the fact that as you say, celebrating your head and how you described it in your own words there, and you're pictured and you look fantastic. And I think that will, I would say that's the most difficult part, other than the diagnosis for some people, because it's such a huge change. And when you have someone like yourself coming out and showing how well you can look, if that makes sense, it might let other people say, well, you know what, if Emma can do it, I can do it too.
Exactly. And again, I mean, I just discovered, it's been a journey of self-discovery of makeup tricks. I put black eyeshadow on my head with a bronzing brush, which I think is amazing. Like, I was just doing black eyeshadow on my eyes, and the next minute I just saw my hand wander up to my head. And I realized, wait a minute, I can create a hair shadow. Just like you put on an eyeshadow every morning, I put on a hair shadow. And then I use bronzer all along my temples to narrow my temple, because otherwise my forehead is like the never-ending story. It just goes on and on and on. So, you know, it's the create definition. And make you feel like in the public that it's a style choice. You've done this by choice. An amazing reaction I get in the street. People come up to me going, yo, girl, I love your look, you know? Yeah. Like, and I just go, thanks, it's for chemo, you know?
Yeah, but so it's almost like people are thinking you're making a fashion statement, when in fact you're adapting your situation.
Exactly.
So you're taking control of it then, really. That's the thing, isn't it? You're controlling this.
Exactly, and that's the thing. Once you shave your head, you realise you're in control again.
I know all about that, Emer.
Oh, do you? Are you bald yourself?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm bald. I shave my head, Emer, you know?
Oh, you can be a chemo queen. I can come on your show and make you a chemo queen.
Definitely. We could do a joint photo shoot.
Oh, you can be a chemo king and I'll be a chemo queen.
Yeah, I'll do that, no problem. And it's fantastic, Emer. I wish we had more time to chat.
No problem.
As I say, it's inspirational, and it's,
Thank you.
I think sometimes too, you know, a positive mental attitude, and I know we're talking about a very, very serious illness in cancer, but a positive mental attitude can help recovery in a lot of different things.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, even doctors say that stress can reduce your immune system, but alternatively as well, positivity can help you with any sickness and ailment to a certain degree, depending on, you know,
of
the
course.
Personality, because every journey is different. But to me, anyway, it's helped my family along this journey. So, it's been, for me, cancer has been inspiring. So that's from my own.
As you are, Emer. Where can people read your blog?
It's www.aheadwithstyle.com, all one word, Ahead with Style. And so it's basically chemospiration, I call it.
Chemospiration, okay.
Yeah, and be ahead of cancer with style.
Yeah, lovely.
So be ahead with style.
I must check it out myself as well, Emer. Yeah, listen, thank you so much for coming on the programme. And what's the situation as it relates to treatment going forward now?
Well, I've just come out of my operation, which was like 9 days in the hospital. I'm 2-3 weeks into recovery now.
Yeah.
So still in a bit of discomfort, but, you know, getting there. And then the next step is in a month's time, maybe in a couple of weeks, I do a month of radiotherapy every day. And then, you know, so there's other tests along the line as well after that. But, yeah, so I'm on the home stretch now.
Brilliant. Emer Cotton, hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you
so much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks.
Okay, we are going to be listening to live music now from Great White Lies. And before we do, we're going to have a chat with Siobhan Shields of the group. Siobhan, thanks for coming on to the programme.
Oh, no bother. Thank you very much for having us.
Now, tell us about Great White Lies. A relatively young collection?
Yeah.
Not in terms of band members, but in terms of how long you've been together. Well, I can't see them. I mean, I don't want to patronise anyone.
We have an array of ages.
Let's get past the age. You get me in trouble. Go on.
We started recording last Christmas and got the EP down. And then I decided to leave the country for six months.
So it was not last Christmas. It was Christmas before.
Yeah. I went travelling then. And then when I came back, we got stuck into it. So our first gig was supporting the Henry Girls in McGroys.
Brilliant.
In October. And yeah, we've just been gigging as much as we can since.
Now, there's six of you and you are spread across Donegal and Derry. Is that right?
Yeah. Aye. Strabane, Derry via Downpatrick, and then Carndonagh and Glenealy.
Okay. Yeah. And how did you come together?
Myself and Neil were doing the same degree together. He was doing a PhD in composition. He's our keyboard player. Mm-hmm. And so I met Neil through that. And then we all joined. I used to run the Inishon Gospel Choir. Mm-hmm. I started it along with Lorna Henry. And so Ruth's in the choir and Sally used to be in the choir. And Gary, our drummer, now drums for the choir. So the choir has a lot to do with everybody meeting up. And myself and Peter used to do jazz. We played a lot of jazz before because I studied jazz in McGee.
And am I right in saying that you got together and made this EP before you were gigging live?
Yeah.
That's a different way of approaching it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lazy.
I think, well, we were rehearsing together for ages.
Yeah.
I had an idea of the sound I wanted and the tunes were coming together and I kind of wanted to get an EP down and then when we're gigging, just be ready to get the CD out there.
So there's an eclectic mix of styles, I presume, from all of you.
Yeah.
And then when you get that all together in the melting pot, how do you describe that the sound they produce?
I find that a really hard question to answer. We have been described to be like Regina Spektor, Roisin Murphy, and then Frank Zappa, of all people. And so it's kind of soulful jazz with a funky twist.
Excellent. And I'm going to hear two performances from you. And we have in studio, was it Siobhan? With you is Neil Burns, Sally Lafferty, Ruth McCartney, Peter Doherty and Gary Raymond. Are they all here?
Sally, unfortunately, couldn't make it.
Why is that now?
She is doing her master's and she has exams next week.
We're going to need something better than that. Why isn't she here? What does she do?
She has broken all her limbs.
Okay, that'll do.
Yeah.
Okay, be it well soon. God forgive you anyway. And what's her role in the band?
Sally sings.
Sings.
Yeah, she's one of the vocalists.
Singing and do all of you sing or what's...
Yeah, we have four singers in the group. So Neil, who's on keys, he
Brilliant.
Sings as well. Myself and Ruth sing and Ruth plays ukulele as well. And then we have drums and double bass.
Brilliant. And we're going to hear the first song from you if you want to make your way through.
Thank you.
You can stick the headphones on afterwards and I'll be able to talk to you then. And it's Great White Lies and they're in our second studio here and hopefully they will sound fantastic, I'm sure. But we've... The sound setup, of course, with six people. We're doing our very best to make sure that they come across as well as they can. Okay, it's Great White Lies from Donegal and Derry. Give me a thumbs up. Are you ready to go? Okay, and tell us firstly, Siobhan, what are you going to sing for us? No? What are you going to sing for us first?
We are going to sing...
I pulled the mic.
Very eager there. We're going to sing Scary Things.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Creaking, oh yeah, my feet stuck to the floor. Oh no.
useless fools to follow. Oh no.
Oh, that was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you very much.
You enjoy it, don't you?
We do, yeah.
Huh?
We do indeed, yes.
It's like a night out and it's 25 past 11 in the morning. is that? Did you compose that yourself?
Or? Yes.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And when is that part of the EP as well?
That's part of our EP, yeah. We have a three-single EP. Or okay. Three tunes on the EP.
Now, before we listen to a second track from you, firstly, where can people get the EP?
You can get the EP on Bandcamp, or you can go to greatwhitelesmusic.com mm-hmm. and get it through there. And we're also on SoundCloud as well.
Superb. Now, yeah. I've no doubt it's a pleasure to see you performing live on stage. Are there opportunities to do that coming up?
There is an opportunity to see us in McGrory's. We're running a night called Ape, mm-hmm. and it's going to be on the 15th of May, which is next Friday. Doors are at 8, and as well as ourselves, you'll see a great new band called Velvet Alibi, it's
right.
a piece funk band. And Lauren Bird, she just won the Kickstarter competition for Chord Blossom. She's a ukulele enthusiast, and the three acts will be playing. So you should come. Everybody should come.
For those who aren't familiar with where McGrory's is, just tell us where it is.
Inishowen, Kildaff, Inishowen. Beautiful Kildaff, mm. right by the beach.
Sounds like a fantastic night. Right, what are you going to play for a second?
We're going to play Give Anything. It's a wee jazz ballad.
And another song that you've composed yourself. What is the writing process? Who's the main songwriter? Do you do it all together?
I write all the stuff and then kind of bring it to the guys and we all put it together all very
nicely. So it's like a musical Dragon's Den. You pitch it to them.
Kind of, yeah. Musical Dragon's Den.
Okay. Right. Okay, take it away, guys.
Okay, we will. Thank you.
Your world and glory, the door. yourself. The wish to discover and the will to strive. You want to move on, face the demon inside. Conquer this life and the real you shall thrive.
Okay, genuinely fantastic, a real treat. Thanks so much to you.
Thank you very much, cheers for having us.
Remind us of the gig again, Friday?
Friday the 15th of May in McGorry's of Culdaff.
Okay, and there's three acts playing.
Yes.
Starts at 8,
yeah.
And we don't need any excuse to go to Culdaff, but certainly it improves the trip knowing you guys are playing. Thank you so much for coming in.
Cheers for having us.
That's The Great White Lies. I hope you enjoyed that. Fantastic, aren't they? Siobhan Shields, we were speaking to primarily there, and we appreciate them travelling quite a distance from Strabane to Derry and across Donegal to get down to see us. Okay, moving on in the programme now, and this is a topic that it's a difficult one to cover because it's quite an uncomfortable subject matter, but perhaps something that we can't ignore either. So we gave a bit of thought whether we'd proceed with this one or not, and I'll tell you what it's based on. There is a prankster called Joey Salads on YouTube, and he's undergone a social experiment, I suppose showing how easy, in inverted commas, it could be to lure a child away from their parents in a very public environment. So we're joined on the programme now by Joey Salads. A very good morning to you, Joey. First, you may explain to us why you decided to come up with this experiment.
So I came up with it because I was trying to come up with extreme prank ideas. That's what I am. I'm a prankster. So I was trying to come up with an idea on, on child abduction. So I was like, what if I did a child abduction prank? And, you know, it's been done before plenty of times where, you know, pranksters would set up an abduction on a child and, you know, they'll get people's reactions. So then I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I wonder how easy it would be to actually abduct someone's child.
Now, you describe yourself as a prankster, Joey, but this, of course, is a very serious subject matter. So how does one rest with the other, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm typically a prankster, but, you know, this video, I intended for it to come out this way and, you know, actually be some kind of awareness-type video.
So how did you go about setting it up then?
I got my dad to film it because I came out to New York to film it, and I just found the parents at the park, and I asked them, and I did that the whole spiel in the video where I asked them for permission to abduct their child.
And how easy was it?
It was surprisingly easy, too easy. And in between takes, as I was filming, there were actually tons of kids coming up to me to pet the puppy. And one girl that came up to me was actually dragging me around to show her friends and her sisters the puppy. So I wanted to try the experiment on the kids that came up to me, but I couldn't find the parents. And I didn't want to do it without permission because I probably would have gotten in trouble.
So we talk about stranger danger, and perhaps we've never been more aware of it. And I think parents are obviously often, lecturing their children through care, of course, about the dangers of strangers. But it appears that perhaps we're not being cautious enough then.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the fact of being cautious enough. It's just children, they're just too young to understand about the dangers out there. And it's just, you know, the parents just got to keep an eye on their kids 24/7. And, you know, a parent could look down at their phone for 30 seconds and look up, and the kid could be gone. You could see in the video how quick it was for me to lure the kids away.
And we'll be linking that video on our Facebook page. But before, when you were seeking the permission of the parents, did they think that their child would... for all intents and purposes, go away with you effectively?
No, they thought the kid would have, you know, never talked to me or ran back to the parent.
What has the feedback been to this video?
All positive. Everyone, a lot of thank yous, you know, saying, you know, thank you for, you know, all the awareness on this. I'm going to really talk to my kid and show them this video. So I'm happy that something like this could possibly help save lives.
And how has it changed, your life, Joey? Because as you say, you're a prankster, but obviously when you move into the realm of more serious subject matter and you have an influence, do you feel a responsibility to do more of this? I presume you've been approached by various news networks and what have you to comment and such.
Oh, yes. I have a list, like, almost like a half a page long of all new social experiments that I'm going to try to do and try to raise awareness for all different types of situations.
And your hope is to make people more aware, I suppose?
Yes.
So when can we expect to see more of these videos come onto your YouTube page for those who subscribe?
I'm going to be posting every Saturday, and I'm going to mix it up between pranks and social experiments probably every other week.
And finally, you know, when you went to film this experiment, did you expect, and I don't want to use the level of success, if you know what I mean, but did you expect to be able to carry out what could effectively been a child abduction so easily?
I did not expect it to be that easy. I kind of expected one reaction, you know, one abduction. I expected the other ones to run at least back to their parents. But it didn't turn out that way. It was just 100% of the kids were coming with me.
Well, it's a disturbing subject matter, but one we can't ignore, and that's why I was very keen to speak to you. Joey, if people want to see your videos and more of the videos, where can they find you?
On my YouTube account, at Joey Salads.
All right, Joey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you from New York, of course. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem.
You're very welcome back to the program. Thanks again to Joey Salads talking about that YouTube video. It's a difficult one, as I mentioned in my preamble, because on one side, we have to be aware of these things. And then on the other side, you know, there could be people who think, well, you're giving people ideas. And it's a challenge on programs like this. It's the same when you interview one of the Gardaí. It relates to crime prevention in that, you know, there is that sense, I hope you're not giving people ideas, but you still have to get that information out there. And it's kind of a tightrope that you walk. So I hope most of you thought that it was informative and it'll make us all think a little bit. Thankfully, it's not something we have to consider greatly here in this country, but still, I suppose better to be aware than not. Kian O'Driscoll. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, very well indeed. Kian, where are you talking to us from?
I'm talking to you from Dingle County, Kerry at the moment.
Okay, and we're talking about the ICE project. What is that?
Yes, indeed. Well, the ICE project is kind of the brainchild of two people called Michael Shea and Claire O'Leary, who are some Irish adventurers, and their aim is to cross all the major ice caps of the world. So at the moment, that sees them in Greenland. They're trying to cross the Greenland ice cap at the moment.
It's a big undertaking, isn't it?
It is rather, yeah. It's a 600-kilometre crossing approximately, and it's going to take them about 25 days on the ice, so it's a pretty serious undertaking, all right.
What is the motivation behind this?
Many and varied, I would guess. They're both seasoned adventurers, mountaineers. Claire's was the first Irish woman to summit the seven summits. Mm-hmm. And they've made two attempts on the North Pole as well. So they're serial adventurers, you might say. But I think a lot of it is also seeing different parts of the world and also the challenge of organising logistically all these things.
And they do have a wish to inspire as well, don't they? Particularly youth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they're getting out and seeing parts of the world that a lot of people don't get to see. So they take real joy in spreading the word when they come back and showing people parts of the world you just don't get a chance to see. And also these kind of rugged terrains and environments that we're just not used to seeing.
So remind us, how far through are they and what's next?
They're only 3 days into the expedition so far. So at the moment, they're just making their way up onto the ice cap itself. So it's, getting onto the ice cap is actually the hardest part. It's take them 3 to 5 days to get onto the ice cap and climb upwards onto it. Mm-hmm. And then they've about another 20 days of crossing the ice. And that's in temperatures down to, it was minus 50 on the ice last week. I think it's a little bit better this week. It's only minus 30.
Oh, that's
but,
nothing.
Still pretty cold. Yeah. Yeah. When you consider our normal home freezer is only about minus 18, it's pretty serious, all right.
And Kian, what's your role? Do you have a role in this? Are you helping coordinate?
Yeah. So I suppose I'm what we call base camp back here in Ireland. So each day the team are checking in. I'm doing all the kind of social media updates. You can find us on Twitter at the ICE Project and on Facebook and on our blog as well. So I'm kind of the coordinator back here in Ireland.
Okay, and hopefully we'll get to chat to them or yourself when they've this completed and get home safe and well.
Absolutely, that'd be great. And as I said, you can track us on the website anyway and keep up to date, theiceproject.org.
Right, so I'm going to take a piece of music now from Lauren Bird. I believe Lauren actually performs generally with the band we've been listening to today, Great White Lies. This is a track now from Lauren Bird. Back with more. Bye. Okay, you're very welcome back after that from Lauren Bird. A great wee track, wasn't it? That's all the time we have on the programme pretty much today. There are maybe a couple of things we didn't get to. My apologies. We'll carry those over to next week. My thanks to... I do have to thank... Kelly's Mountaintop, Kelly's Centre at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny, who supplied our newspapers today. Yvonne, of course, who produced the programme, Yvonne McFadden. And mostly, importantly, all of you who contacted the show, listened to the programme and sent your comments in and entered the competitions and everything. That's all, as I say, for now. Don't forget, if you missed any of the programme, including some fantastic live music and great chat, you can listen back online, highlandradio.com, in the entertainment and playback section, where you can catch up on what you may have missed. That's all we have, as I say. We'll be back next Saturday from 10. I'll chat to you during the week too. Have a fantastic weekend and be safe.
The Weekend Edition, brought to you by the Northwest Garden Show, Saturday and Sunday, 23rd and 24th of May.